Hitler if you think we're on the run.
Welcome to a special edition of the Dad's Army podcast. This is Stage Show Special Number 3. Today is Sunday, the 9th of December 2007. Over the next 45 minutes or so, you'll hear a number of listeners actually taking part in the podcast. We've had emails galore about the stage show. We've had listeners recording MP3s and sending them to us. We've had people email in and say they'd like to take part in a phone-in conversation about the stage play. So thank you to everyone who's been involved in putting this podcast together. It's been the most participative podcast we've had yet, and I hope you enjoy it. We'll go straight into some audio comments we've received from one of our listeners. This is from a guy called Simon Pettit. Thanks, Simon, for sending in your MP3. Simon saw the play in Hull, and here are his thoughts.
Hello, boys. You requested, if possible, if somebody could send in an audio. So I'm going to have a little go with doing a review of the show that's travelling around the country. Around Britain, that is. The Dad's Army Lost episode. My wife and I, we went down to the whole new theatre. But actually, the three shows that are on offer are A Strike for Fraser, Loneliness of a Long Distance Walker, and the infamous The Deadly Attachment. The shows themselves were very good. The stage setting, it's actually suspended on cabling, on wires. So it's actually lowered down and then hoisted back up. So there's no actual fixed stage as such, or not much of it anyway. So it can actually be moved in and out quite quickly, and also can be enhanced, with lighting and sound to very good effect. It's not a criticism, but the only thing that possibly could have been improved was the sound. They didn't actually have any electronic microphones, so they actually had to project themselves out into the auditorium. So it did mean if they were acting and moving about and they weren't actually facing the audience, then sometimes it was actually lost of what they were trying to get across. I will actually go through each character as I saw them. Starting off with Captain Manwaring, or Mannering. It was played by Peter Martin. Now, Peter, of course, is famous for Coronation Street, and before that, All Creatures Great and Small. He did actually have a part in the Beiderbecke tapes, which was one of my favourite programmes, with the great James Beck there. He played him very well. He had the right persona. He interacted with all the other characters in the same pompous way. So it was very good. Likewise, when we get round to Sergeant Wilson, played by David Warwick. Now, David himself was trained at RADA, which, of course, means he's got a lot of theatre work, and substantial theatre work. But it was in EastEnders as well, so he's done some television. And prior to that, he's done Doctor Who. He's done some quite recent Doctor Who. And a little while ago, well, 20 years or more, actually, he did The Pirate Planet, which was written by the famous Douglas Adams. Of course, Douglas, famous for writing The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But he did play John LeMessurier, who plays Sergeant Wilson. He did play very good. He had that slight whimsical way about him, of that casual attitude. Now, moving on to the other characters. Corporal Jones, played by Richard Tate. Now, Richard Tate was also in EastEnders. It appears you had to be in EastEnders to get onto this stage show, but yes, he was in EastEnders, and of course Corporal Jones was famously played by Clive Dunn. Now, Richard is very small in stature. He's about the same size as me. So he is quite small. He had, I don't know if it's makeup, because I must admit I don't know his age, but he had the grey hair. He had everything, and his stature was perfect. They did a few jokes on his stature, so they took the mickey out of him. And he was enthusiastic. I think that's why we described Jones as enthusiastic. So he was enthusiastic, running around, always volunteering for stuff. And he played him very, very, very well, indeed. Now, we're moving on to us to Private Walker, played by Leslie Grantham, who, of course, was also in EastEnders, as Den Watts. Leslie, of course, he was even in Doctor Who. He was in The Resurrection of the Daleks. So it appears you're either in Doctor Who or EastEnders to get in here. Now, Jimmy Beck played Private Walker, of course. This is the old Cockney Spiv. And Leslie, coming from, well, not Cockney Spiv, but coming from that sort of background, from London area, he fitted in very well. He played him very well indeed. He didn't overpower any of the other characters as well, so they didn't give him extra lines because he is the main star. Of course, him and Peter. He did the correct thing. He played Walker as Walker was. Because, as you said, wasn't really the main character. That was Captain Manwaring and Sergeant Wilson and Corporal Jones, I would have said. But yes, Leslie played him very well indeed. So hats off to Leslie for that. Now, we're coming now to the star of the show, without a doubt, Private Fraser. Now, Private Fraser was played by Kern Falconer. Now, Kern has had lots of theatre work. It looks very, very classical in some cases. He did Julius Caesar and The Marriage of Figaro. And Kern, he was Private Fraser. If it weren't for the fact that I know that John Lurie's dead, I would have said he was on the stage there. He played him in everywhere. I don't know if he's been studying his tapes or what. But he had the same mannerisms of him, same voice even. It was incredible, and even the same hair. So I don't know if that was makeup or if it just naturally looks like that. Now, moving on, we're actually going to move on to the character that probably didn't work fully, and that was Private Godfrey. Now, Private Godfrey was played by Brian Jackson. Now, Brian, he's had a lot of work at the Old Vic, and he also did work for the RSC, the Royal Shakespeare Company, which showed in his training of his voice on stage. He was, without doubt, the most powerful voice on that stage. You could tell that it's training from his theatre work. Of course, Private Godfrey was originally played by Arnold Ridley, and Arnold himself was a frail old gentleman, playing a frail old gentleman. So, but Brian himself is a powerful man. You can tell he was so strong, but he did overpower the other characters in a way. His voice was much stronger than Captain Manwaring's, for start off. So I don't know if it would have been better for them two being in reverse roles, in a way. Very, very powerful voice. But a marvellous actor, of course, Brian Jackson. Yeah, a marvel, wonderful actor, but I don't know if he should have played Private Godfrey. Private Pike, played by Thomas Richardson. Now, Thomas has... he had all the correct mannerisms. The twitching and all that Pike does. He even had his scarf, so it did fit in very well. Thomas has had a lot of theatre work as well. He did The Mousetrap and Not Camp, and he portrayed Pike just how Ian Lavender did. So that was very, very good indeed. Now, if we're moving on to Rogers, that was played by Martin Carroll. Now, Martin's done a lot of theatre work, also some television. He's been in The Bill and The Minder. Yeah, there's probably not a lot of things to say there about Martin, because it's not such a big part. It's a slightly larger part that he had on The Deadly Attachment, of course, but in the other ones, it's not a big part. A bigger part, of course, is for the U-boat captain himself, which was played by Justin DeVille. Now, Justin's had quite a bit of theatre work. He was in Knocked Up, and even in a film with Calvin Klein, a film called De Lovely. Now, the U-boat captain, of course, himself, famously played by Philip Madoc. Because Philip himself, he even did a lot of Doctor Who. He was the mad scientist in The Brain of Morbius. That was played against with Tom Baker, I believe. And also The Power of Crawl, that's another Tom Baker one. But Philip's probably more famous for when he played The Life and Times of David Lloyd George. Now, I'm sure this helped Philip, why he could portray the U-boat captain so well, is the fact that he is a trained linguist. He studied languages and can talk many languages, so it was probably quite easy for him to do that sort of work and portray a U-boat captain, and that's why he did it so well. But Justin DeVille, he must admit he did that very good. He came out with all the lines, everybody cheered and clapped, as you would expect, and you don't want to know soggy chips at their left place. So it was all fantastic stuff it was. all in all, it was a wonderful night out. So if any criticism at all, which is only small, is probably about the sound. Other than that, it was very, very good indeed. So yes, a wonderful night out for me and the wife. We stopped in the hotel across the yard. Met a very nice policeman, gave me a speeding ticket, which very nice of him. But there we go. Right, bye bye now.
Now, I've been fortunate enough to see the stage played twice already, and I'm hoping to get to see it again next year on the second leg. But my two experiences have been extremely different, mainly because I think my expectations differed drastically for each performance. The second time I saw the play was at Dartford, and it seems like quite a long time ago now. That was back, it was a couple of months or so ago. And I was lucky enough to catch a couple of the audience and record their thoughts just after the play had finished.
The Orchard Theatre in Dartford, having just seen the stage play for a second time, and I'm here with four members of the audience. If I can ask your name first.
It's Michael Spinks.
Hello, Michael. Have you travelled far?
Not awfully far, no. We've come from Romford.
Romford. What did you make of the play?
I really enjoyed it. I didn't know quite what to expect. I'm not a great, great fan of Dad's Army. I've seen a few episodes, and sort of the expectation is that you're going to see what you saw on telly. Well, you don't see that, but yes, it was enormous fun.
I think it's almost impossible to replicate exactly what it was that you saw on TV, but how well do you think the actors actually did in portraying what you have in your mind before you go and see the play?
I was surprised at how well they did, and there seemed to be a pretty good correlation between mannerisms and sort of size and look of the people as well, as far as I recall.
Was there any one particular actor who you thought stood out from the remainder of the cast?
The guy playing Mannering had the hardest task, without any doubt, because everything falls upon him. Wilson came across absolutely wonderfully, I think. He added to the part. It never occurred to me before, but the balance between the relationship between Wilson and Mannering is almost the centre of it all. They changed that slightly in this one, and it was interesting to see that.
No, it is pivotal, I think, how they react to each other, and it sets the mood of each episode. Thank you, Michael. Moving on to Andy, who I understand is a bit of a Dad's Army purist. What did you make of the play, Andy?
I was quite impressed, actually. I came with not much expectation that they wouldn't be able to do exactly what we'd seen on so many episodes on television, but they were they did a better than expected job. I was impressed.
I think Leslie Grantham said beforehand, and a bit of a hiding to nothing, given how people do hold them in such affection. Was there one particular episode or one moment that you thought was worked really well?
I thought they did a very good job of when they'd caught the U-boat crew. I thought that because everybody knows that, there's a bit higher expectation of that. I thought they did quite a good job, and I think people would have been upset if they hadn't have done that, because more people would know about that, I would have thought.
What did you make of the two lost episodes?
I think they did a good job, but I think that if you hadn't actually read the original scripts, there was a lot of comedy within that that you would have missed.
I agree.
And there seemed to be a little bit of a murmur sort of behind me in the audience, and people were a little bit lost for moments. They couldn't quite see the comedy moments.
I think the familiarity is not as clear in the first two, clearly because they've seen the other two on TV. Okay, thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
Moving on to you, I understand you're Brian?
That's right, yes, I'm Brian.
Okay, what did you think of the play in general?
Well, I've watched a fair number of the TV episodes, and I wasn't really sure what I was going to see. I thought it was great. It was good fun. Mm-hmm. I had a good laugh. I thought the characterisation was absolutely fantastic. You could tell who the characters were by the look and by the mannerisms, even though it was obviously so different.
Yes.
It was good. I really, really enjoyed it.
Well, a big question really is for you, was it worth missing the rugby for?
Well, with the result of the Wales-Fiji match, yes.
Well, I'm glad you didn't think it was a wasted day out.
No, certainly not.
Well, thank you very much, all three of you, for taking the time to record your thoughts.
Okay.
This is the Dad's Army Podcast.
We've received another email from Alan, who also saw the stage play at Wolverhampton. And he says, saw Dad's Army tonight at Wolverhampton and must say it was very good. Peter Martin was excellent as Mannerin, although I thought better in the second half, but still great. David Warwick as Wilson was sound. Richard Tate as Jones was a little too energetic, but still good. Lizzie Grantham as Walker was very good, but lacked a little of the humour. Kern Faulkner as Fraser was excellent. Could have been Fraser, he puts in brackets. Godfrey, poor, which is the only words in which he mentions about Godfrey. Pike, little to do or say. And all the others were okay. He also says that the scene setting was poor, needed lots of imagination in order to recreate the image that you had in your mind from the TV series, but very enjoyable. Next, please. P.S. The scene in The Deadly Attachment where they discuss the parachutists, I cried with laughter. The looks of disbelief from Mannerin, priceless. Go and enjoy.
Mr. Brown goes off to town on the A21, but he comes home each evening and he's ready with this.
Our next piece of audio feedback is from Nick Rich. Now, you may recognise Nick's name as he's written into the podcast on many occasions with comments about the podcast and Dad's Army in general. Nick said he'd be prepared to speak to me over the internet, the wonders of modern technology, and allow me to record our conversation.
This is a review of the Dead Army Stage Play, the lost episodes, which I was lucky enough to be able to go and see at both the Orchard Theatre in Dartford and the Worthing Connick Theatre. The Dartford Theatre, I felt the acoustics was not so good, which I really couldn't understand why, because that's a more bigger modern theatre, whereas the Connick Theatre in Worthing was a more older theatre and a more closer, I would say more intimate venue.
Okay, Nick, a Strike for Fraser. What did you think of that episode?
Strike for Fraser was a very enjoyable episode. Reminded me of the later story when Fraser promoted temporary to captain. They well crafted and well acted by all the actors. They knew their lines. All the laughs came in the right places.
What did you think of Kern Faulkner's portrayal as Fraser?
He was fine, but my only nitpick with him was his hair was too long for Fraser. John Laurie had shorter hair. He did look like a wild Scotsman.
I think he looked a little bit madder than John Laurie did sometimes.
Yes, definitely.
I think the Strike for Fraser needed to have Fraser a little bit crazier than usual, because it was such an early episode, they were still establishing the characters. And Fraser, to me, always seemed a little bit more bonkers in the early episodes than he was in the later ones. And you mentioned when he gets promoted in If the Cap Fits later on.
If the Cap Fits, that's what the episode I was thinking of.
Yeah. Doesn't he do better, though? I mean, he's a useless Lance Corporal, but he's an excellent captain.
Oh, yes. Thanks to watching that thing, we know now what to do if you get German paratroopers in the shop. In your shop, you could have a load of chairs in the shop.
Yes, I thought that scene worked really well.
Yes.
I have to admit. And the gem for me there was Lizzie Grantham. Was there a particular actor or character in this episode who you thought didn't work so well?
Godfrey.
All right. Why did you say
that?
You
know why I thought, because, again, to take nothing away from who played Godfrey,
Brian Jackson.
Yes. Yep. Godfrey, in the series, he comes across as a doddery and a kind old man, doesn't he? He wasn't so doddery as what Godfrey was in the television series. In the scene where Godfrey starts making those noises, the lion noises, it just seemed as if Godfrey was sort of having a funny turn or something.
I know what you mean. I think it's very difficult when first thing you do, make the comparisons with the original actors. And you're right, I think that Brian Jackson's portrayal was very different to Arnold Ridley's. His voice was very deep, I thought.
It was a low-key performance. That's what I thought. It was a sort of a low-key performance.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they didn't give... Well, a lot of the supporting actors didn't get much of a chance. I think they cut a lot of Pike's lines from the first act, i.e. the first two episodes.
Looking at the original script, James, Pike doesn't really get much to say in those two episodes. Mm. There isn't a lot for him to do in the Strike for Fraser.
I know. I think this was limited to about two lines, though, because Pike and Fraser are my two favourite characters, and I was waiting for Pike's lines to come in, and there was about two lines in the whole first act, and I just thought, even if that was true to the original scripts, they could have introduced a few more lines, because they gave Jones some more lines than he had in the original scripts as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You had to switch off from your mind the original actors that were playing the part. You just it is hard to do, as you say, but you do have to try and switch it off.
But you're right, that's why I reckon you, I mean, because you said something during our email conversations that I agreed with you completely on, and that was that you said you enjoyed it vastly more the second time you'd seen the show.
Yes, I did, yes.
And I did too, and I think that's because you know what's coming this time. You're not expecting too much. You're expecting a set of actors who vaguely resemble the actors in your mind, the original actors in your mind, and you're prepared to accept it a lot more the second time round.
So. That's right, yes, exactly, yes.
And moving on to the other episodes then,
Long Distance Walker is next one.
And what did you think of this episode?
Oh, that was brilliant. I wish that one had survived. My favourite scene is when they got Leslie Grantham or Walker jumped off that ladder, trying to make his feet marks, and Fraser did it. Now, did that really hurt when he jumped off that? Because you felt that when he went out on that floor, and he still was suddenly heard a yell at the side of the... Everybody laughed. I mean, he got a laugh both times I saw that when that happened.
Yeah, it's because it was funny. But he can't. He can't genuinely hurt himself each time he does that, because there are some times when he does it twice a day.
Yes, exactly.
I thought that was brilliant. It's a very, very good scene. And I think in all of the press and publicity that Leslie Grantham was involved in, he referred to that scene and said that's a really good scene and it's a real gem. When I spoke to Ed, the producer of the show, he said that Jimmy and David really thought this particular episode was a gem, and it was a real shame it was lost.
Yes, I think Walker or Leslie Grantham came into his own in that episode. That was his episode, I felt.
It was completely, yeah. And I think he did brilliantly. So, how did you feel about... I mean, obviously, Leslie Grantham's 30 years older than James Beck was when he played the role. Did you think that mattered at all?
I don't think it did. I've done a bit more research into James Beck and Leslie Grantham. I found out James Beck didn't come from East London after. We came from North London.
Oh,
and
right.
Leslie Grantham came from Camberwell in South London. Leslie Grantham being a South London boy is trying to impersonate an East End boy, but James Beck didn't come from the East End. He came from North London instead.
I thought the two actors, Beck and Grantham, were almost indistinguishable. If James Beck had, you know, if you put another 30 years on him, you'd have probably got Leslie Grantham.
Yes. You would have done, yes. The only thing difference, I think, with Leslie Grantham, he's a lot taller, a bit taller than James Beck, isn't he?
Yeah, and the height of the actors is strange, because you don't notice it so much on television. Well, I don't notice it so much. But Richard Tate was very short, I thought. And I don't know whether or not Clive Dunn was short or not, but on stage, he was the shortest.
Have you never met Clive Dunn? He's a medium built kind of chap. He isn't tall, he isn't small,
I've seen him once at Bressingham, I think it was 2006. Maybe 2005, I can't remember. But I just thought that was noticeable for me. But perhaps it wasn't. The reason why everyone really wants to watch Dad's Army and what they remember is Don't Tell Him Pike, Out of the Deadly Attachment.
Yes.
That was the last episode.
Yes.
What did you think of that episode? How did they portray that?
The radio version they did on the stage, or was it the television version? Because I noticed there were bits missing from the stage version that are in the television version and in the radio version. For example, when Godfrey goes to sleep and Captain Mannering remonstrates and says, "I want you awake and alert at all times, Godfrey," and that bit is not in the stage play.
Maybe they did the same with this episode than they did with the missing two episodes. It's just that because we are familiar with a TV version we noticed it far more. Possibly, I mean, they had to change little bits of the script. I mean, the audio of Loneliness with a Long Distance Walker, I think Walker says, "Are the Arsenal playing at home?" Where on the stage play is West Ham.
Just
small little things like that. And obviously, you might not notice that so much because people are not so familiar with those episodes. But with A Deadly Attachment, I noticed practically everything.
Yes, because also when Walker asked the German prisoners of war, "Have you got any swastika armbands for sale, or photographs of Adolf Hitler or Nazi daggers for sale?" Now, that's not in the television, it's in the radio play version, but it's not in the television version. in that line. But then again, that line is in the Dad's Army script book, though, and it wasn't loose in the television closing for some reason.
I think it's interesting how they just draw both versions together and come up with another third brand new version.
Well, that's what I thought they'd done.
Yeah, well, I think they probably had. I thought the whole of the second half, I mean, we haven't talked about Room at the Bottom yet, but
we
would in a second. But I thought the whole of the second act, which consisted of those two episodes, was far more slick, and it seemed, although it wasn't necessarily as interesting, because obviously we know these stories, I thought the actors seemed far more comfortable with those stories, and maybe I just got used to those actors portraying the roles by then, but I thought it was really good. Room at the Bottom, then, finally, what was the standout moments for you in that episode?
I think with the standout moment for me, the opening scene with David Warwick as Wilson, and again Leslie Grantham as James Beck as Walker. Now, I was convinced there for a minute, I was watching John the Measurer and James Beck for a minute, they were that good in that opening scene.
Yeah, they obviously did their job brilliantly then, and again, you'd just seen them performing for another hour anyway, so perhaps you had got used to them. I thought they were great. I have to admit, Room at the Bottom, I think, was probably one of the best, although, you know, they chopped bits out of that one.
They chopped out some bits from when that drill sergeant was giving Mannering's stick. There are some bits missing from that scene.
They were, it was certainly, I seem to remember, he punched Pike in the stomach at some
point. That's right, yes, that's right.
And that was gone, that wasn't there. And again, it was a shame because that's a good Pike moment, and I was disappointed to see that just glossed over a little. Okay, just to summarise then, to tie up, Nick, if I could just ask you, out of the entire production, what were the key areas that you liked? What were the things that you thought was, either really made you laugh or thought, yes, I'm really glad I've seen this?
The beginning scene of Room at the Bottom, I was convinced, as I said, I was watching the two original actors doing it. The latter scene from The Loneliness of a Lone Distance Walker, and as you said, the scene in Jones's shop from the structure phase were the three scenes that were really outstanding and sort of made me laugh.
Great. I mean, did you have one particular episode out of all four that you thought worked the best?
Definitely Loneliness of the Long Distance Walker.
No, interesting. It's funny, because I would say Deadly Attachment, and I would have loved to have seen Under Fire as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's my favourite of the three missing ones. I mean, it was great to see the first two, obviously, but hopefully, perhaps, maybe when it tours next year, they might do a change in episode, they might do a change of actors as well, you never know.
And hopefully
I'll be able to find that out reasonably soon. Well, Nick, thank you very much indeed for spending the time speaking to us. Really appreciate you taking your time out your Sunday morning. We've received some more feedback from a guy who calls himself Fundy. Just got back from the Dad's Army production at the local theatre, and I have to say I was rather impressed. As I've read a number of negative reviews recently, I wasn't expecting much, and indeed the thought of sitting through four episodes that were under par would be too much to handle. But they were great. It was good to finally see the two missing episodes, not knowing what to expect as the episodes went on. The standout part of those two was the scene with Wilson and Manor in the interview session talking about Walker the Walker. Pure classic entertainment. Room at the Bottom was well done and everything seemed to be in order. But it was the Deadly Attachment that myself and others were waiting to see. They did a sterling effort in bringing across the passion of the show. Yes, some of the characters weren't quite the same as in the real Dad's Army, Godfrey in particular, and Pike's voice. But all in all, it was a job well done. In fact, Leslie Grantham was very good as Walker, and as we know, James Beck got a couple of lines wrong or forgot to say his lines at the right time in the actual episodes, but Leslie was bang on each time. I was expecting to give it a 6 out of 10 and come away slightly disappointed, but I ended up giving it an 8 out of 10 and have come away having had a jolly good time and wishing they'd done another episode after those four. Money well spent.
You're listening to the Dad's Army Podcast.
I'm joined once again by Paul Carpenter from the Dad's Army Appreciation Society, this time to discuss the stage play. Hello, Paul. Welcome back to the podcast.
Good evening, James.
First of all, can I ask whereabouts you went to see the play?
I went to see it at the Wickham Swan, beginning of November.
This is a fair way into the run, then.
Yeah, it was about a month or so.
Seems like ages ago when Tony and I went to see it during its opening week.
Yes.
It's Stevenage. It's been going for months now. So from your point of view then, Paul, what would you say was the best episode out of all four?
Well, the one I enjoyed the most, I think, was Strike for Fraser, I think. it was just interesting to see how they approached it, and also to see the whole episode from start to finish as a piece. The bit that I enjoyed the most, what surprised me and made me laugh quite a lot, was the bit with the ladder and when the Mandarin was in the desk. And even though I've read the scripts, I forgot all about that. And that was a real surprise. That was sort of new to me almost. So it was very funny. I mean, I did some bits of my own stage play from Strike Fraser, but if I'd have remembered that bit was enough, I would have used it, because it's very visual,
yeah.
Very easy to do, and gets a huge laugh, and it's not just once, it's twice, three times, maybe big laughs throughout.
A Strike for Fraser was the first episode out of all four. You see in these characters, or you see in these actors portraying these characters for the first time. I mean, who was it who hit you straight away as, yes, I can believe that character?
Well, it had to be Fraser, I think, the most believable and accurate portrayal of John Laurie, I suppose, in some respects, and also David Warwick. He was very good. He's obviously studied the part very well, and laid-back manner. Everything. Most disappointed, I think, I'm not the only one really, with Peter Martin, who played Mannering, totally miscast. And I think I got a review from somebody who wrote in to say they actually saw the stand-in play in Mannering, and who was a lot better, and they'd seen the play a couple of times.
It's interesting, I've spoken to someone, a chap who listens to the podcast, who also caught Colin Starkey playing Mannering. And that's strange, because the understudy was, I think, again, I forgot his first name, but I think the surname was Whittingham. He normally played the verger. And, yeah, I again thought Colin Starkey gave a far more convincing portrayal than Peter Martin.
Yes, but, you know, it's a one night, and whether it could sustain a run like that, you don't know, do you?
No,
one off might be fine.
Going back to the portrayal of Fraser from Colonel Faulkner, I have to say he was probably my favourite actor out of the entire four episodes. I thought he was extremely true to life. He's had his hair criticised as being too long. Had he had a haircut by the time the stage had reached Wickham?
I don't think it was too long. I think it was stuck out a long way. gelled outwards, but it's certainly unusual, and probably almost portrayed him as like a cartoon character, perhaps. Quite odd.
I've said this, Tony doesn't know what I'm talking about, but I think there are two different Frasers in the entire performance. I think the Fraser in A Strike for Fraser is very different from the Fraser in the other three episodes.
He's certainly more aggressive.
You never see that. You didn't really see it beforehand. He always had a cutting edge and a very sharp tongue, but he was never a complete moron, whereby he'd go and buy a boat hook to try and knock someone out with.
Alcohol-fueled, perhaps.
Possibly. Quite possibly. Maybe that's what it was. But if you compare him to the officer, or Captain Fraser, who appeared in If a Cap Fits, then they were two very different characters, and they were portrayed remarkably differently, I thought.
Oh, and certainly in the Cap Fits, he was a lot better as an officer than the Mannering, really, because he used the young members of the platoon in the important positions.
Absolutely.
So that's plain common sense, as Fraser would say.
Who doesn't always use it, and particularly didn't use it in A Strike for Fraser.
No.
Moving on to the next episode, the next missing episode, The Loneliness of the Long Distance Walker.
Yes.
Again, what were the areas that you that struck you here?
I think they rushed that one too much, especially near the end. It was, I don't know, I think they seemed like they were just trying to get the thing over. Especially the last scene in the canteen, and obviously the exercise and around the fitness.
Yeah.
And then, if we knew it, it was at the end, and that was it.
I like this episode. I liked it very much on the radio version. But, again, I would say it was probably slightly weaker on the stage. And I'm not sure if it benefited from having a man in drag feature as part of the underground station segment.
It was unusual. Got a few laughs, I think, because of the fact that they were doing a Morgan Wise and all getting in bed together.
I wasn't overly keen, but the story itself, I thought, is quite good, and I understood from Ed this is one that Jimmy and David were particularly disappointed about, the fact that it was lost, but they did hold this episode in quite high regard. Very few lines for Pike, though, I thought.
Very few lines for Pike, and in fact, Pike had a lot of lines removed from him, even in Room for the Bottom, which is the following one. He had some good lines, cracking lines, and because they edited that episode quite severely, a lot of his lines weren't used, which is a shame, really.
It's disappointing, you know, Pike being one of my favourite characters. I thought they'd cut lines. I knew Pike didn't have an abundance of lines in the missing episodes, but I thought they actually gave Jones a couple of extra lines, and yet they took some away from...
They had some ad-lib lines in. The classic line where you get a little behind with his rations, and he sits on a bacon slicer. Yeah. And that would I was waiting for that, and they skipped it, and I thought, that's an excellent line to raid a laugh.
And you're quite right. By pure coincidence, I actually remember where I heard that line first, and that was, I was listening to the audio on a Walkman, I think, many years ago, and I remember walking down just outside St James's Park Station in London, and I started laughing on the street, because it was so funny, and I did get at least one odd look. But I thought it was a fantastic line. I thought it was really good, and I didn't understand why, because I thought Tom Richardson actually played Pike very well.
He did what he had to do. He was totally underused, and yeah, it's a shame, really. Even the bit in when Mannering comes back from the being out all night into the bank, they could have made a bit more of that as well.
There's still a couple of characters we haven't spoken about. We'll leave Leslie Grantham for the time being, but Godfrey, and again, not a particularly huge role in any of the episodes.
No, and far too fit and healthy, really. I think if they'd have swapped Godfrey with Jones, Richard Tate, I think that would have worked better, because Richard Tate was a more elderly, frailer, and he could obviously do the put on the old Doddery act.
Interesting,
I think they should have swapped the two around.
I'm not too sure whether or not Brian Jackson would have carried off Jones convincingly, and I thought Richard Tate was a very good Jones, but I think you're right, Godfrey certainly was far too nimble and healthy.
I mean, Richard Tate reminded me of Mr. Pastry. That's one for your older listeners.
So moving on to Room at the Bottom and the Deadly Attachment are the episodes that, of course, we're far more familiar with.
Of course, and they weren't technically lost, so really the title of the play should have been 50% Lost Episode, really.
Oh, and that's catchy as well. Yeah, it's an interesting choice for me, Room at the Bottom, because I don't know if it was a late addition, but it certainly wasn't in the early publicity that they were going to be performing this one.
No, I got that impression that they were coming up short on Deadly Attachment for the second half. And they're looking at something to slip in.
Although, having said that, one of my other listeners has told me that they've dropped it now, and that they are only performing the three. Yeah.
Okay.
So not quite sure whereabouts they're putting the break, but I understand at this moment in time, particularly in Hull, it was performed just as three episodes instead of four. I like Room at the Bottom, I have to say. I like it on television as well. And apart from the criminal underuse of Pike, I thought it came across quite well.
Yes, I think it, even though it was truncated severely, I think the actual story was short and sweet, and a nice little start to the second half, really. Shame we didn't get the Sergeant Major shouting and Mannering a bit more, and doing his bit of exercises and stuff like that.
He was a bit wussy, certainly, I think, yeah, compared to the chap who portrayed him on TV.
And a little bit of drill would have been nice, getting them all jumping up and down a bit.
No, indeed. I think the part also with Pike getting a punch in the stomach was cut.
It was, yeah, and that's a nice punchline.
There was a couple of things. So I'm jumping around again here, but there was also something about Alsatians being a German dog being, you know, that was cut from... Stripe for Fraser,
yeah.
I sincerely hope that was cut for timing reasons, or the fact that it wasn't a good joke rather than being politically correct.
It was one of the, you're waiting for something to turn up and they shoot right past it. It's less than fault of knowing these episodes quite well, I suppose.
I suppose, and I think that's probably why those fans who are less familiar with the episodes probably, on the whole, tended to enjoy them a little bit more. But, I think we may be coming across a little bit negative here. I mean, there were some good things about the play. I mean, what were the things that you actually thought, yes, they got that just right?
I think Strike for Fraser was, they got that right. And I can't say they got the atmosphere, there was no atmosphere or nostalgia, I don't think, in the play. They got the costumes right, which was good, because there was no scenery to speak of. And I suspect that the target audience would probably be the older, and maybe the older ones with grandchildren perhaps, would be expecting a traditional set and play rather than just a few floating bits of scenery. And I think a lot of people were disappointed. You can understand a touring play not having to cart around the lone scenery, but a few flats wouldn't have gone amiss, really. And the depth, because in the Wickham Swan, where I saw it, had quite a deep stage, and also a lot at the front as well, and we were waiting for them to use it, but they didn't tend to. There was a lot of stage, and they didn't use
it. I mean, I've seen it in two locations. I saw it at both Dartford and Stevenage, and the sets, although the theatres were vastly different from each other, the set was identical. And the reason, I think, I mean, you just pointed out that they didn't use the front of the stage so much, or they didn't use the entire stage, and I think that was emphasised. It actually draws attention to the way that the television series was filmed, and especially during the parades, where you would have Mannering addressing their platoon, and of course the director's always focused on the reaction of the platoon, and that is impossible within a theatre, and they didn't solve that problem.
No, if you can't go in tight on something, you've got to spread yourself out. They didn't tend to do that too much. It was quite strange with the ladder sequence. That there was nothing on the set at all, and then it's a ladder appeared, and you think, well, something's going to happen to that. What's the point of bringing it on? And then, of course, you realise why it's brought on. It seems like a means to an end, really, and if it had been there, or something had been there all the time, it wouldn't seem so obvious, really.
So lastly then, the episode that everyone is familiar with, The Deadly Attachment, and a fitting finale, I think. What were your thoughts on this one?
Very good. I was expecting it. I've seen it a number of times. A lot of amateurs do this production. I've seen quite a few variations of it. It was very similar to others I've seen. And credit must go to the U-boat captain, whose role, cameo role, excellent. And also, he had the right amount of menace. And also, the crew as well, even though probably people weren't watching them, they play their part really well as well. They were supporting, but they were just in the right position. They were just right for the part, really.
I think they're the kind of roles that you soon notice if they get them wrong. I think it was Justin Deville who played the U-boat captain.
I think it was a good portrayal, the way he stood and talking with Mannering.
One actor we haven't discussed at all, and is probably one of the most important, is Leslie Grantham's portrayal of Walker. Clearly he had his own episode within The Loneliness of the Long Distance Walker, but I thought on the whole, despite his age and despite that he wasn't smoking, I thought he was reasonably okay.
His portrayal was pretty good, I think, of Walker, and he had that right sort of demeanour. He over-exaggerated the Walker a few times, more like George Cole in his younger days at St Trinian's rather than Walker. But I think he probably just threw that in a couple of times. The voice was good for what he had to do. Really, he didn't have to do that much. I think he just about passed muster there. I think he'd done very well.
He was considerably better than I expected, especially given, you know, the age difference between himself and James Beck. And obviously he had probably one of the hardest roles to portray, because, you know, when people think of Dad's Army, they think of Mannering, they think of Wilson, but they also think of Walker pretty soon afterwards. And if it had got him wrong, I think it would have impacted the play quite significantly.
Yeah, I don't think he got him wrong.
So, I mean, all in all, did you enjoy it enough, Paul, that you would actually go and see it again if it happens to come near you next year?
I may do. I'd like to see if they'd done any changes to it or taken on board anyone's comments. And as you say, they've dropped something. Whether they're dropping it and inserting another section of an episode, I don't know. It'll be nice to see. I mean, I certainly would consider going and see it again, yes.
Paul, thanks ever so much for spending the time talking to us about the play. Okay. And I'm sure we'll catch up with you again very shortly.
Okay, nice to speak to you.
Cheers, Paul. Now, as some of you know, this podcast is usually recorded sometimes weeks, sometimes months in advance of the date it gets published on our website. And this is one of the very rare times when this particular segment is recorded just a couple of days before it's due to be published. Now, we were hoping at this point in the podcast to bring you an interview with Ed O'Driscoll, who's the producer of the stage show, to discuss the second leg of the tour, and unfortunately, that hasn't been possible. However, I have spoken to Ed, and I have got some rather interesting news. The role of Mannering, currently being played by Peter Martin, has been recast. Now, I'm not sure at this stage the reason for that, but Peter Martin will not play Mannering in the second leg of the tour. Instead, it will be another actor called Timothy Keightley. taken his place. Now, to be fair, I've never heard of Timothy Keightley, but he's got a very impressive record of TV appearances. Most recently, in a 2006 episode of Robin Hood, he's also been in Inspector Morse, he's been in A Touch of Frost, he's been in Foyle's War, and he's also got a bit of a Hollywood history. He's been in Shakespeare in Love, which was 1999, and he was also in the 1991 film called Sleepers, which I believe had Brad Pitt in it. So it'll be very interesting to see how Timothy fares in the role of Mannerin. No other cast member has been recast. Leslie Grantham continues to play Walker and will do so until the end of the tour. In terms of where the play is travelling to, I haven't got a full list, I'm afraid. That will appear on Calibre Productions' website, of which you can find by clicking on the link on our website. But Ed did confirm that three venues that it will definitely be playing, and that will be the Hackney Empire in London, and they will also be visiting Newcastle and Belfast. Now, I'm not sure what theatres in those last two cities they'll be playing, but I'm sure that the venues will be on the website very soon. That's it for this fortnight's podcast. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time, where, amongst other things, we'll catch up on the news. I realise we haven't gone through the news items the last couple of podcasts, and we have quite a bit to discuss as well. We hope to be able to also bring you an interview with Stuart Wright, who is the town councillor at Thetford and is the guy behind the plans to erect a permanent statue of Arthur Lowe in Thetford to commemorate Dad's Army. Hope you've really enjoyed listening to your fellow listeners' comments on a stage play. Thanks ever so much to everyone who sent in an MP3 or sent in an email with their comments. As always, comments are always welcome in a podcast. I'll always make certain we read them out. Usually mail address, Warmington on c333@yahoo.co.uk. And until next time, take care and goodbye.
I'm Frank Williams, the vicar, the Reverend Timothy Farthing from Dad's Army, and you're listening to the Dad's Army podcast.